So the procedure here is just that I'm just going to ask these guys to tell you who they are and answer a couple of questions, and then I'm just going to throw it over to you to ask questions and make comments and so forth. And the theme for today is working towards a sustainable future. So we'll get to that in a moment. First of all, if you could just each have to project, well, we don't have the mics. Just in a very, very briefly, who you are and what you do and what you got out of Making Links this year. Do you want to go start with Jean?
Okay.
And then across.
G'day.
Everybody here?
I'm Jean Burgess. I'm a research fellow up at the Centre for Creative Industries at QUT. And in my research, I kind of do sort of traditional research, trying to figure out what's going on with Web2, and particularly for cultural participation, user-led content creation, user-led innovation. So, you know, I look at stuff like YouTube and figure out what people are actually using it for. And then the other kind of side of the work that I do is an applied focus on co-creative media in partnership with community and cultural organisations, mainly focusing on digital storytelling.
My name is Mia Gowdy, and I'm a lecturer at UQ in Indigenous Health, and I'm a Aboriginal woman. And I also work a lot with community groups, mostly Indigenous, and I'm a filmmaker and currently working with digital storytelling in a similar way, co-creative practice and looking at how it can be used to build capacity in communities.
Hi, my name is Daryl Berkey. I'm the President of Computing Assistant Support in Education. We're based in Canberra. We're a co-op of 30 community organizations that got together to form basically their own IT service. We don't do a project per se, but what we do is support the projects of our members so that we can build social capital and support community development.
I'm Penny Hagen. I'm the strategist at Digital Eskimo. And
my background is a combination of working with community organisations, design and their research. So core focus of what I currently do is with organisations from a strategic point of view to understand who their stakeholders are, who their users are, who they're trying to talk to, and then help them develop a strategy using technology to do that.
My name is Julia Chanakakis. I work at the National Australia Bank in their Technology Operations Infrastructure Group. I have no background in not-for-profit work. I think I'm just very interested in how partnerships can be created between corporate organisations and not-for-profit. And what I got out of Making Links is, I think, a whole new appreciation for the real ideas and the brain power and the enthusiasm that sits behind addressing these technology challenges in our society. So I think for me it's a whole new world, I think, opened up.
I don't think everybody addressed that question, no. What you got out of Making Links. So we'll just maybe we can look back to it.
Sure about myself. So I'd just like to say thanks, really. It's been great for me to get very inspired around how much good work people are doing. And I think one of the most important things for people, like, we've talked a lot about the challenges that come up in different ways, a lot of them are very similar, and really good case studies of how other people have had success are the most useful things, because then you can take them back to your organisation, to your management, to whoever it is that you need to talk to and say, this was successful, this is what they did, this is what they got out of it, don't be scared, let's have a go. So for me, that's the really important thing, is to know there's a lot of really great examples out there that can be used in that way.
Well, what I got out of this was meeting you guys, because that's one thing that you can't do online. Okay? And you'd think because you're sitting four seats back, you can get away from me. But you can't get away from loudmouth gangs. That's how it goes. Okay? So what I got out of it was meeting you. I already knew you. And hearing what you're up to, because we just don't get a chance to do that through email. I got to make faces, like the person with the camera there. I've been talking to for a couple months. And I find that invaluable because it inspires me. And I feel very honored that you let me speak at a couple of talks that you gave about Joomla and my little ridiculous KO Dog Way discussion, because I would like to challenge people to think about how we're using IT, because I do see it interfering with our work, and I'm on a mission, okay? And it's almost a religious mission that technology should work for us, not against us, okay? We've got to make it work for us before. We've got to accept the importance that the people living on the streets with mental illness, disabilities, they're counting on us. So let's get rid of this crappy technology and make it start working for us.
Is anyone taking pictures of the panel? I can't share and take pictures. We just went up to a really convenient spot. So, thank you.
Sorry.
So just all of what they said, basically. No, definitely also thank you for being able to come here and... I think just coming together and being able to see what people are doing, and yes, we can do that online and we can share in those technology ways that we do, but to actually meet people and really hear and have the conversations over coffees and make those links is an appropriate name, making links, it's what it does. So, yeah, that's really it, I think.
Yeah, what everyone said... Perhaps I should just march up to the back, the back row.
Look at him, I can't believe how far they're sitting.
So I'm distracting you from the complete nothingness that I've But actually, you know, for me, this conference has been really interesting because of the opportunity to cross, not just cross disciplines, but actually cross over from practice and kind of policy and research and, you know, creative practitioners as well as people who work directly with communities. And for a tech-oriented conference, that's actually really valuable because at this conference we're all focused actually on what technology is for and who it's for, who our stakeholders are, and what their needs are. And you'd be surprised how rarely that is the heads actually of tech developers and the actual kind of businesses that sit behind some of these technologies that we use. So they could probably learn a lot.
The next question I had, and you know, there's not very many questions before I'm throwing it up to other people, was, you know, what's your vision of a sustainable future for ICT and community? What needs to happen for your vision to become a reality? Sorry,
easy question.
Pardon?
The easy question.
Yeah, that's right. Saving lives.
It's not the middle.
Look, I think that's a very good question. I think we're on the right path in that what I believe will change this is empowerment through education, and basically that's what we're doing right now. And I've been to other conferences where we're doing this. We're seeing great initiatives that provide education and the information that we need. You know, I spoke about false authority and that I felt that the sector in many cases is getting very bad information and people are, for various reasons, buying into that. And, you know, you've heard a lot of good information here. So you can take that information and we can use it to move forward in a positive manner and to do what I said in my intro, which, you know, I might have sounded a bit silly, but I'm dead serious, is I do know that technology can be transparent. And it can empower your organization, and you can move a significant amount of your administrative overhead to service delivery. We have been doing it for 10 years, and if you want to look at some of our examples, it's all free. We could care less if everybody knows. If somebody wants to go start another case, use what we do, please go do it. I've done enough work doing myself. So, but I do think we are heading the right direction, and the word is getting out. And it's things like this that I think will make it sustainable. Do I get a good question?
Yeah.
Is that reasonable? Okay. Oh, I feel better.
It's a very good question. I don't know if this really speaks to sustainability so much as... We're used to having new tools all the time now. That's an ordinary fact. And I think what's really positive is that I see people moving beyond getting excited about every new thing and kind of jumping from one platform to another, and I would just say to kind of really get the most out of the opportunities afforded by new technologies is that we all just need to simply play with them in the same way that the existing kind of user groups are playing with them. So what is Twitter for? Well, we'll know by trying to use Twitter for a while, for example. And the other thing, I suppose, is to stop the government from doing the internet.
Yeah.
That would help.
Well, I would talk about sustainability, particularly in the area that I'm working, which is really with Indigenous communities in this country, but also in North America. And sustainability in that context, I think, this medium of using technology, getting over that, what we've called the digital divide, but also the generational divide, is a really important thing in using technology. And the ability to have communities have the ability to maintain and run their own technology within their communities and link rural and urban communities together and be able to tell their lives so that that link up happens, I think is the way to actually build sustainability, because it gives it a living presence. It really makes culture become a living, breathing thing. And I think that's really, really important. And then I think on top of that, sustainability comes from the linkages that we make outside of those areas into other sectors, into health, into arts, into governance, into employment. And so a lot of the practice that with Pelican and Natalie sitting up there, but Pelican Expeditions and Saltwater, one of the unique things around that project has been the partnerships across those areas with arts, with education, with governance. It actually won the Reconciliation Award, Premier's Award in Queensland for business partnership with actually the ANZ Bank. So there's that partnership happening between community and between industry and between government that I think is really important. And between science and old knowledges with new knowledge, to bring those two things together, to bring scientists and traditional owners, to bring local knowledge with old traditional ways of dance and story and make them contemporary and make them alive, to bring those generations together is what makes something sustainable. That it's not so much the technology, but it's what the technology enables to happen and the way it builds capacity in communities. So, and that leads to employment, working with people and saying, okay, we're doing this project, digital storytelling or whatever, but if we have a young person come through that is showing promise, can you offer them a traineeship that will lead to a job with the State Library, with ACME, with whoever it is that you're talking to? Because all of these issues, I think, then technology becomes a tool that we're using to really bring people together, not just in the medium of technology, but in community capacities. That was a mouthful, wasn't it?
Well, it's a big question.
Yeah, I don't have an adequate response to that question, to be honest, but I think there's a few different things, but the one I suppose that is most interesting to me, just off the top of my head for that one, is that now, there's been ideas around collaboration and use of technology, obviously, for a long time, and it's only just starting to come to fruition more recently as the availability starts to get, as it does become more accessible across the board, and obviously there's still issues to address there, but it's massively different than it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago when people were doing collaborative research and trying to get that kind of stuff to happen. So that's very exciting that we can really see that momentum. And at the same time, there's this there's been this understanding of globalization, which can be quite paralyzing and quite terrifying. But what's happening at the same time as we're understanding that we're becoming global is that people are going back to being local as well. And so people are working in their own communities and connecting in their own communities and then connecting with other people who are working in their own communities. And so I think we kind of went out, and that was very scary, and now we're coming back in again as people are starting to appropriate that and say, okay, that's fine, I'm now part of it and I can make my place in it for me right here, rather than necessarily being swept up by the globalization aspect of technology. So I think that's for me very exciting.
So, good question. And actually, in the last session, one of the last questions was around sustainability, and the answer was, oh, sustainability is a very complex issue. So when you asked that question, I was like, oh my God, complex issue. I think from a corporate perspective, so I probably see three key elements that help us from a corporate perspective to make the link between our IT strategy and our corporate social responsibility strategy, make that link sustainable and ongoing, so we don't cop out halfway through it. So this is how I could answer the question, if that's useful. Three things. First of all, I think it's the application of entrepreneurial concepts. And I've had a couple of conversations with people over the days around, social enterprise and social entrepreneurship and applying these concepts to create social outcomes. And it's entrepreneurial thinking is not about generating a profit in terms of financial returns, but there's a lot of different currencies in which you can term a value and entrepreneurial outcome that you create. So for an organization, that does not need to be profit. That can be in terms of brand value, in terms of employee satisfaction, in terms of engagement, in terms of whatever. So entrepreneurial concepts, I think, are quite important to creating sustainability. The second is making what you do part of how you do things. So really ingraining processes. For example, our asset donation scheme, it started off as a once-off. The second people would have lost interest, it would have just reverted back to how it used to be. Integrating that asset donation stream into our carbon neutral strategy, into the way we manage the life cycle of our computer assets, it's now actually part of how we work. It's not an additional project. Same with the skills-based volunteering. It's part of our value proposition to the employees. But the promise to the employees when they start in the organization is, if you come here, you're able to do this. And this is why employees come. So you can't just take that away, because that alters your DNA of your company. So integrating that into how you do things is really important. And then the third bit, which I think is really important, is identifying from a strategic perspective, identifying the required paradigm shift in your employees. So if we get employees out there that work in the communities, get involved in things like this, apply their skills to create social outcomes, understand the reality of the communities out there and what they're struggling with and the innovation that's happening, if people experience that, those are the future leaders of the organization, and they will bring it back onto the agendas of corporates. And I think that's really important, and this is why I'm so keen to really expand knowledge and skills transfer and just the exposure of corporate ivory tower into not-for-profit and community work. Because you really, people that experience that, it changes their mindset, it changes what they value, it changes how they work and what they put on the corporate agendas of their teams, their departments, maybe their organizations down the track. So those three.
Thank you. A great set of answers. I was actually going to throw it up into the audience right now, but then I just remembered something that Marcus said before, which was just, he mentions opportunities and threats, but is he?
Marcus.
And I don't like to really go into the negatives too much, but I just thought in the current sort of political global climate, what sort of threats are there? And how they could be overcome.
In the current climate.
Global climate, financial collapse.
If I give the panelists a minute to think about it, it came actually up because I gave the example of the fact that, say, on Facebook or on social networking sites, there's a lot of political activism, a lot of activism in general occurring, but some of it is really just kind of, a lip service, because you can very easily just click a button and you join a group. And all of a sudden you are, against climate change and you're a supporter of Barack Obama and you can do all these types of things very easily. So I was bringing up the kind of threat that may be a threat that people will think that they've done enough by just doing very simple and might not be quite as impactful activities or actions on social networking sites, and that
will
lead you. So you got a, Jean wants to answer.
Just to shut you off. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Actually, it reminded me of the conversation.
That's very interesting, Jean. What are...
That's why we don't let them sit together.
It reminded me of the conversation that you and I were actually having. Something that I've been thinking about with digital storytelling, as well as with the adoption and uses of various new Web 2 technologies and so on, is I'm not sure that across the board we have really robust evaluation methodologies yet, or that we're sharing our knowledge about an appropriate context appropriate way to evaluate the outcomes and impacts of what we're doing. So I think perhaps, and this is not at this conference so much, but across the board, I think there's still a little bit of magical thinking that if we're using the latest Web 2 thing, then everything must be 10% more awesome than it was. And that's a great example, Marcus, because we really need deep knowledge of how are people actually using Facebook and what for. Okay, so there's an Obama page or whatever, but does that add up to anything more than performing your support for a particular political brand? In what spaces are people actually activating, deliberating, changing policy or whatever? And in terms of digital storytelling, we've got to a stage now where we've been running heaps of different projects, and I include myself in this. The evaluation methodology a lot of times is asking people if they had thought it was great, and they say it was. But we need to move beyond that now and say, actually, this had health outcomes measured in a really sophisticated way that makes sense within that context. So we've had a lot of conversations with your PhD, which is great. So, yeah, I would say let's get together and get some really sophisticated research around impacts and outcomes of evaluation methodologies.
Yeah, I think just to leap on from that, or take on from that, the whole concept that Jean's talking about of evaluating, and what are we actually doing and who are we actually doing it for, and what are they actually getting out of it and how is it useful? I think all of those questions, and actually listening to hear what the questions are from people who are making the stories. Exactly, is really, really important. And an example of that in the research that I've been doing, which is really seeking to see, a lot of media has been happening in Indigenous communities since, Karma and Walkri. It's got a very strong history in this country. Digital storytelling and that whole medium is really starting to take off. But, just to do it without really looking at how it's being used and how people want to use it and if it's being useful, if it's contributing to social and emotional well-being and all these kind of questions are really important. But beyond that is really listening for the question to come from the community. Mm. And in the research that I've just been doing, one of the questions that's coming to me very strongly from community is this technology going to take us away from our actual participation in the practice of culture? Is it going to take us away from actually hunting and fishing and weaving and practicing language, because then we have a whole generation of people who just want to document that? Or is it something that enables engagement in those practices to keep them alive? So these are the kinds of questions that we need to listen for, I think, and really take on board and really evaluate and bring that out. And then the other thing that I would say about this process of using online Facebook and social networking is that when I was in the States at the Mead Film Festival, HBO had put in some money for three universities for developing games, and Games for Change is a very interesting thing, I think, if people are interested in that aspect of linking actual real-time events like the Darfur. One is called Save Darfur, and another one is set in Haiti, and we're also developing this in Indigenous communities of taking scenarios that are real life scenarios right down to the actual demographics of what's happening, and creating avatars in those games that go through scenarios, and people actually have to interact with it. And there's a point where in the Darfur one, for instance, someone is taken by the jungle week to the refugee camp because they haven't been able to get the food and water they needed successfully, and they do it on a ratio that's real time of 1 in 4 people won't be able to get food and water and will end up in a jungle weed captivity situation. So in that interface, it becomes not a game anymore, and it actually goes to a page that says, this is actually real, this is actually happening, you can do something about it, and then it gives you the options of actually what you can do. So it, they did evaluation on this, and the response of people going beyond the game and actually engaging in a social action was increased 75% through this methodology. So I think it's, again, how we use technology and how we think about how it engages people to remain socially active, but using the technology to support that, to bring it to a broader audience that might not otherwise be engaged.
Thank you very much. Did anybody else on the panel want to comment on that? Oh, there's a question.
I just wanted to comment on that, because I think that those people who've joined the causes online are possibly a real reservoir of resources for people who are campaigning on those things too. So I would say they're doing it, some are doing it because they're disengaged, but others are doing it because they want to do something, and they actually want to, they would go further if they knew where to go, kind of.
Can sometimes create a bit of a critical mass. So, particularly with some of the campaigning and just developing numbers of people that will align themselves to the cause, can actually get whoever they are trying to get the attention of to take note. So even if someone has just clicked a button and, you know, maybe 40-50%, and in all campaigns, in all causes, there's always a whole group that are working that cuts out. And then there's a whole lot of
organizations are about their community commitments.
That's wrong.
And I think there is, and I had a conversation, I don't know if we were talking before, yeah, around the difference between corporate social responsibility and plain sponsorship. I think, you know, the community, the strategic community investment that organizations do, that should be long term. That should be, you know, mapped out in a way where it can survive, you know, your sort of yearly ups and downs. So I think it'll actually be quite an interesting test to see how organizations, how strategic they respond to that, and whether they're really committed.
There's a lot I can say. You know, like I think of the old saying of, you know, think globally, act locally. You know, when I hear these kind of things, you know, because I am a hippie. Well, I just missed it actually. My brother was a hippie. Okay, he was 4 years old. So I just missed it. So a little bit spun off on that. But you know, I really believe in that because I can't change the world, but I can certainly help one instance or one person. And so, you know, when I think about threats and opportunities, I think more locally than what your research means, lofty ideals are, because you're certainly way up above me in that conversation. And I like to think about the sector, and I do a lot of thinking about the community development sector. And I think we are our own strength and our worst enemy. Because I see the sector as a group of people who get the most out of the least, so we have a tremendous return on investment. But I also see the sector as not actually standing up for itself and letting people know that we get that tremendous ROI. And you know, people aren't going to flock to us just because we're doing good work. We're competing in this world, and the type of things that we've been talking about here, we're competing everywhere. And I guess in sales talk, we're talking about exposure and conversion. You know, we are competing with a lot of things. It's harder for people to pay attention to social issues when they're trying to figure out how to feed themselves. So I really think the sector needs to pick up its act a little bit. We need to support our peak bodies a bit more. We have a terrible problem in the ACT, which would be considerably different than I think most of you realize, in that we just simply can't partner with our politicians. It is just not an option. And we're even at the point in my organization where I'm not allowed to speak to them because I've insulted most of them. You know, because it just got to the point of being ridiculous. I mean, if these people were your employees, you would have terrible issues. And they are our employees, and I don't think we realize that. So we need to start holding them a bit accountable. And in my view, the way to do that is through our peak bodies. And I don't think our peak bodies are getting enough support from us because we're all stretched in our resources. Okay, so just to summarize, you know, I really think our greatest asset is ourselves, how hard we work, our ability to get the most from the least. And at the same time, I think our greatest threat is us because we don't represent ourselves, I think, as we should.
Thank you, Daryl. And as part of the peak, I have to say I really appreciate what you say, and I didn't pay him to say it, the PAO members. But I know I'm really well supported. So let's throw it open now. I'm sure these guys have a lot of interesting things to say. So, or any just comments on ideas that have come up? Marcus?
I just wanted to ask about the sector and the you know, who are we? And it's not supposed to be a very philosophical question at all, because on the organizing committee for Making Links, we spend, I think it's fair to say that we spend quite some time in the last 12 months trying to identify the audience or the kind of, you know, target market in business language for Making Links for this conference. Is it, you know, in the most obvious choices to say it's the sector is the non-profit sector, but I'm kind of thinking that term is not very well placed to really define who we are, because we kind of define ourselves by saying, well, these guys make money, and we are not making money, or that's maybe not our prime interest. We still have to pay our mortgages or our rent, but we just say we are the non-profit. So there's profit, there's non-profit. I think in these types of times that may be ill-defined, and I'm wondering if you might be able to suggest what else is out there to kind of not necessarily have another definition, but just so that we as a committee are able to say making links is for these and these groups, people, organizations. How do we say, you know, who is in and who is out? I mean, obviously we can't say it's, well, it's for everyone, but after the end of this conference, you might have gotten a flavor, an appreciation of what we're trying to do, but we're still struggling, I think, internally. I think Jill might be able to comment on this, of having to say, you know, the scope of the conference, of where do we draw the line, really, and I think non-profit can't be it, because what is really behind it is the kind of, you know, the motivation for all the initiatives and the activities that are happening, and the projects that we've heard about in the last 2 or 3 days, then, well, okay, they're not driven by profit in so many cases, but they're driven by other things. And so I'm wondering what your views are on that type of issue of the profit versus non-profit discussion.
Can I jump in? I wish I had the flyer, or the, you know, what it says, the theme words for this conference. What were they?
Community responsibility and sustainability.
So, you know, I think when you say, where do we draw the line and who's in and who's out is, for me, it's like, where do people meet those ideas of sustainability and responsibility? You know, and they could be coming from the corporate sector or the government sector or the philanthropy sector or the non-profit sector or the individual, you know, completely mad-driven, you know, passionate entrepreneur that manages to uber-connect and get people behind them. You know, I mean, there's all sorts of range of people, I think. And I actually think that the power of change at this time is for us to go beyond those boundaries of what's kept us separate and to engage people, you know. I mean, when Gandhi walked across India, you know, he didn't sort of go, oh, well, that guy said no, that's the end of it, you know. He kept going and knocking on doors and knew that people could say no, but also knew they could say yes, you know. And a lot of the projects that I've been involved at and currently am involved in, you know, I'm kind of like, I don't even think that way anymore about, well, who am I meant to be with or not be with. It's kind of like, this is like amazing, and how can I inspire you to want to be involved in this, and how can we build what we do to make it better and bigger and more successful, rather than whose piece of the pie am I taking? You know, we need to shift our thinking, I think, and encourage people to shift their thinking, to be thinking that we're all in this together and that we're trying to achieve change. So in a conference like this, I think it's better to ask, like, what are the values that you're seeking to bring people to, and have that be as the guiding and self-selecting, actually. I mean, if you're not in on that stream, why would you bother coming unless you want to be the devil's advocate and get pie thrown at you, you know? That's fine too, because we need all those views. I believe we need all those views. We need all those voices to find the diversity that brings us into something that we can do together and make effective change. So,
yeah, thank you. I would really second what Sabir has to say. I think it's really of interest to me that this year at the conference we probably had the greatest mix of different kinds of organisations and people represented. We had a lot of people from research and university backgrounds, more people, not a huge number, but more people from corporate and business backgrounds than before, and of course more people from the traditional not-for-profits. It's much more of a range of the types of places that people are coming from, and I think it's and partly this afternoon when we were thinking about the panel, I tried to deliberately choose people that represented some of those different strands, because it is about working together, I think. Yeah.
I think partnerships is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And to define ourselves as not business or against business, then already immediately creates a tension that doesn't have to be there, and it makes it harder potentially for business to see how to define as oppositional, sets up an opposition.
Yeah. Right. We actually are businesses, and this is something I keep saying to non-profits. You know, for-profit, non-profit, they're both business models, but they're both businesses. As you pointed out, we pay salaries so that our people can pay their mortgages and such. So they're both businesses. They're just different models. And this is part of the disservice I think we've done to ourselves, is there's this there's this image of the poor charity,
yeah.
And the poor charity will be happy with the, you know, the six-year-old desk that only has three legs, because they're a poor charity. Now, you know, I'm sometimes known as being politically incorrect, but I feel like I'm amongst friends, so surely I can say these things here. But, you know, I'll give you one example, and I've already mentioned the ACT government, so I might as well dig myself in a little bit further. Turn off the cameras. I went to a committee for a year at the ACT Chief Minister's Office, and they proudly announced that they're going to donate three-year-old computers to our sector as their response to our need for computers. Now, I stood up and said, thank you very much, and I said, why are you donating these computers? And they said, well, they still have some useful life in them, so we think they should, you know, they should go to schools and to charities because, you know, we don't want to see them in landfills and just be thrown out. And I said, are these the computers that I paid for with my tax money? And the chief minister said, well, yes, they would be. And I said, well, if they still have useful life in them, why aren't you using them and giving my sector the new computers? Because we have a greater return on investment than the public service. Now, I made my point, but CASE has never been funded by the ACT government. Okay? And that's the risk you take. So I think if I had the rest of you there saying the same thing along with me, they wouldn't have been able to get away with it. Okay? So it's a change in attitude. And part of the attitude is that we are businesses. We're businesses with tremendous return on investments. And I actually had to remind, just at a meeting very recently at the ACT, that we're actually delivering critical services. Okay, I had to actually have a discussion at the ACT government over whether we were going to build an extra lane on a road that they should have built in the first place, and we're now going to waste $40 million building this extra lane that wasn't built in the beginning, or provide services to the homeless. And there's 1,200 people sleeping on the streets in the ACT in a population of 350,000 people. That's not acceptable. Okay? So this is the type of thing we have to stand up, and I'm sorry if I'm getting a little bit angry, but I'm not angry at you. But the point is I don't hear the other groups. All the groups that were working in homelessness there, and I don't work in homelessness. I work for the groups that work in homelessness, and I'm putting my time and energy into making it easier for them to work. But my point was, you know, in the ACT, we can eliminate homelessness. It's more difficult in the capital cities, but there's only 1,200. It doesn't take that much. And it's a complex issue, of course, and it's not just about money, but the point is we identified we have the resources, we have the skills, but the 1,200 people are still sleeping in the park in the nation's capital in this small little city. So we must stand up and represent ourselves as giving tremendous return on investment to the community. And we must make people realize that we're damn good businesses worth supporting.
If I could just do my bit on this one. I was just going to say kind of the same thing with a different spin on it, which is I also don't think that the profit and non-profit distinction is very helpful at all, possibly because I come from a centre for creative industries and innovation. And I would think about what does it allow, getting rid of that divide, what does that allow us to do? One thing it allows us to do is to say, actually, this sector is innovative. We're innovating in service delivery, in effective, low-cost, weightless uses of technologies, in ways that government departments and a lot of existing businesses would really like to understand. So that is a much more positive, and in the current central government environment, I think it's actually a very powerful policy argument.
Yes.
That innovation is coming from the margins, it always has. We know that. And the other thing that allows us are really interesting partnerships. So some of the work that my colleagues, Helen Clavey and Co, do at QUT, working actually with big urban developments on old industrial sites, and doing a lot of kind of co-creative media and community engagement work around that, because they need to do it to make that development effective. It's not just window dressing, but that also allows the sector to kind of really get involved, to get some funding. I look at the kind of the positive opportunities created by getting rid of that profit or non-profit thing.
Is anyone from the audience? Natalie?
Well, I just wanted to add, and in line with some making links, that at least in my experience of real partnerships, and partnerships isn't like the idea of the charity and you just give money and then you're done with business. It's actually bringing people on board, and it's something I didn't mention with the project up north in Cape York, who had the ANZ Bank on board for 3 to 4 years, and we have their managers and we have their regional managers and we have their bank tellers come on board and then can discuss with elders ideas about microfinance. And so, you know, partnerships are real ones where you're actually engaging people in areas and in situations that they may not normally go, might be outside their comfort zone, but they then get an on-ground knowledge. And it's the same also working with government and getting higher level managers out on the ground, because people that work in the public service who work very hard, they're scientists, for example, in the EPA, you know, upper level of the board, have no idea what their scientists do and how important their data collection is. But unless they have an understanding, they won't keep supporting it. And already the EPA has removed the term marine science from, you know, the areas that people work in, because they're getting removed from actually their grassroots or their all the important basic work that that organisation does. So, you know, all sectors require that re-energising of actually who they are and then engaging. And it's all about getting your hands dirty. You know, it's just getting people together and working together and then forming relationships. And so it's not about, you know, I'm from here, you're from there, you know, or, you know, it's really about working together to achieve outcomes. And if you look at, you know, all major companies, you look at all government, you look at not-for-profit sector, all their outcomes and all their strategies are often very, very similar. I mean, everyone's values are basically very similar. So it's just about engaging them on that level and saying, okay, let's work together.
Any more? Just wanted to see if anyone in the audience might have any more questions or comments.
Well, I think we're close to wrapping up. And I'd really like a glass of water, Jonathan.
Thank you.
I'd like to mention that in your talk today, when you were talking about social corporate responsibility, it dawned on me that in another country I know about, they have an organization for IT people called, hope I get this right, Computer Professionals for Social Responsibility. Let's just pretend I know what I'm talking about. And I don't think there is such a thing here. It's very odd. I belong to the System Administrators Guild, which would be the top IT people in the country, and I know that lots of them do volunteering, because I asked at their convention about 3 weeks ago. I did a little mini talk there. And they are all helping out community groups. So they do want to help with the IT, but they have the situation that we identified 11 years ago, where it's all one-offs. You know, so we have to provide, you know, a venue. And we heard it connecting up and possibly here about circuit riders in the UK that, you know, makes a pool of people and then supervises them. Simon spoke today about Tech Finder. So, you know, if we put those kind of things in place, we'll get a more balanced baseline of support for everybody instead of just a hit-and-miss approach to IT. And I think that'll be very exciting because, you know, really, once we really harness this IT towards our goals, then things are really going to take off. We're in the infancy right now, you know, and we're making some mistakes, but that's cool. That's how you learn. And, yeah, I think it's just very exciting times that we live in. And conversations like this just point that out. You know?
That's a great note on which I think we need to end the discussion because it's nearly 4:45. So big hand for all our...